I'm agnostic with leadership. Leadership is an agnostic trait. It doesn't have a religious kick. It doesn't have a right or a left slant to it. It's something that all parties involved would appreciate a kid being able to do, coming out and value a good work ethic, good time on task. You know, the whole mentality of growing up is if you're on time, you're late. If you're early, you're on time. Inbreeding that in kids from the earliest of days to where they understand that it's important to do the small things correctly, because that's what gets them noticed and gets them to stand out in the market today, which makes them a good employer, which contributes. All those things, doesn't matter if they're in a high socioeconomic or low socioeconomic, there are still gaps.
All right. Well, Dr. Aaron Allen, I apologize in advance. My dad raised me in a very weird way of ignoring titles, even if you've earned them to be doctor, because we just love to get everybody down to their informal setting of Aaron. And so if you don't mind, can I call you Aaron today?
Absolutely.
I have no doubt that you're okay with that.
Yes, sir.
Just name it.
Yep.
It's a privilege to talk to you. The gentleman who connected the two of us is someone I look up to in so many ways and think the world of. And so I just feel honored that you also trusted him and us to give you your time today. So thanks for joining us.
And you're right. That mutual relationship we have here, he's a good man and he's a part of a great organization. I appreciate the opportunity to tell a little bit of our story and to help other people see how Franklin Covey has helped us with our leadership and moving our organization forward.
Yeah, well, I'll say his name is not Chad Smith, so we'll keep moving. With that, we ask the same question to everybody who's ever been here for the last several years. Who are you and what do you love about what you do?
So I'm Aaron. I'm a father. I'm a brother, a husband. I'm a leader. And I've done that in various ways throughout my entire life. And I really didn't realize it at the time until I look back and see all those spaces and places that made me into the person I am today. I got into education by accident. And so I'm leading in an educational space when it wasn't my goal coming out of high school, going even coming out of college. And then, but the skills that I had doing other jobs prepared me for this adventure, to being a superintendent in a medium-sized district in North Carolina. And I figured out it took me about, this is year 26 in my professional career as an educator. And it probably took me until about 4 years ago to realize that my space of what I can contribute to the organization is all about leadership, and growing leaders is where I find my joy. And we kind of did a project here last year with our staff. And if you can come up with your word of the year, what is it? And mine is about opportunity. And so with that, I look for opportunities to grow people that maybe don't think that they should be grown, or they have the potential to be grown, or maybe I'm focusing on the wrong person when I truly know that they have a gift, and it's our job to find that gift and to make it come to life and for the betterment of our community, and not just our school system, for our whole community.
Yeah. Let's unpack a couple of things there. There's a lot of windows I think I can go down. So for me, when you say you didn't think you were going to go into education, one, I want to know your story, but also as you look around at so many hiring gaps across the country for a lot of school districts, we're looking for folks who aren't traditional educators. So I'm curious, as you share your journey with us, how does that give you insight to find other folks to come in and hopefully become educators so we can continue to grow the pool of folks who are loving and serving our kids?
Absolutely. So my part of my story is, you know, I went to Carolina as an undergrad, and I went on into the sports medicine field. I have a degree in exercise science with a concentration in athletic training. That was going to be my passion. That was going to be my career of choice. I got a master's degree from Temple. That's right. Taking care of body injuries, those kind of things. And at the collegiate level, at the hospital level, and, you know, I had a desire to teach that in higher ed. I had a desire to go and get my PhD in kinesiology biomechanics. And then life happened. I needed to move home to help take care of my grandmother. And I had a job in another far, far, far away place called Hawaii. And gave that up to come back home to North Carolina from living in Philadelphia to help take care of my grandma. And so a couple of months to live, she lived a couple more years later. But in the meantime, I tell people all the time, I had to teach to be able to train, to be the trainer for a high school where I grew up. And so that journey kind of led me down this path of, you know, taking a job to be the athletic trainer and then realizing, oh, what is this thing called teaching? What do I have to do? And really becoming what they called at the time, 20 something years ago, lateral entry or alternative pathway to education. And so when I approach hiring today, I appreciate people realizing that they're willing to take a risk, taking a chance in education. Our focus here is to hire for culture and to hire for how you fit in, not necessarily your ability to teach, because we can teach you that. I want somebody who's going to be a good person, has a good spirit about themselves, a good role model perspective, and understand that they're leading kids and they're guiding kids, they're coaching kids on a daily basis, but they're also coaching colleagues. And a lot of people don't feel comfortable coaching other adults, but I want people that feel comfortable in that space. Then I can teach you the tools of how to do a 6-point lesson plan or how to use a double bubble map or those kind of things about how to teach and handle teaching and learning. That can come. And I think that philosophy exists in the private sector as well. There's a lot of folks up here today that we combat with. I think of an HVAC friend of mine. He said, look, I don't want you to go to community college and get your certificate because I just have to unteach you everything that they've taught you. I just want to hire somebody who's going to be a good customer service and I'll teach them the skills that they need to be successful at the job. I just need them to be a good person and a good servant of my brand and my name. And that's kind of the...
I'm cutting you off just because there's like 12 things I want to go down, but you said something when you say, you know, I've got a friend who is worried about you going to get a degree to untrain you. So that's just one little tiny example. I'm positive you've got a number of business folks telling you the same thing. So if that is true, what are you hoping to train? You got kids in high schools, hopefully, I think at your high schools, like what are you hoping they're coming out of your schools with? If we don't want them to be untrained later, like how are you developing? How does that change your vision of how you're developing kids given that kind of insight?
Absolutely. So, you know, it becomes different when you have children that are going through this opportunity right now. So I have two high schoolers and a middle schooler and enrolling this leadership journey out for our district and through their eyes is kind of been a unique perspective. But out of this, I want to see an outcome that kids are able to make good decisions, be proactive, think ahead, you know, understand the importance of those soft skills. In North Carolina, we have this rollout of something called Portrait of a Graduate. And Portrait of a Graduate is, you know, personal responsibility, collaboration, commitment to the job and to the calls, and a lot of other things that the industry has told us that they need workers to embody. Our journey with Franklin Covey and Leader in Me has given us the vehicle to kind of help with that development, even in the kindergarten and elementary stages, but also up to the graduating senior, to the point where it's not necessarily the focus about academics. We're infusing this in all that we do to help make that whole child become really a whole developed person before they leave us, with the goal that they're going to contribute to our economy, contribute to our community, come back, stay here, all those kind of things that are naturally parts of the organics of a school system and local government and local economy and just building a community that really supports each other. And we're on that journey to do that. But the things that unfortunately, a school system today, schools today, any educational institution today are taking on the roles that the family used to do years ago. And it's just become more accentuated that we're responsible for cultivating that inner leader in every person and not just the ones who have a title or the ones who are the popular kid or the ones who are the captain of the team. We're really looking at ways to cultivate leadership in every person so they leave us fully capable of showing leadership in the workplace.
Yeah, Aaron, I don't want to politicize this in any way, right? This is not about what this show is about. But on both sides of the issue, I grew up in a household where both parents were involved with politics deeply as their job. So on both sides of the aisle, which is interesting. So if you think about my brain growing up and exposure to it, when you say something like, you know, education has changed where we're taking more responsibility of helping mold kids, right? Like I don't disagree with that at all. Actually, it's why I'm do what I do, right? That's probably why you and I are aligned a lot philosophically in leadership. However, I believe both sides of the aisle politically can have issues with that sentiment of, well, you're not their parent. Why are you even going down that path? Or we believe it looks like this, this, and this. How are you not going that way? How do you kind of thread that needle, knowing what you know you have to do as an educator and as a leader of a school system?
So I guess the word that when you said that comes to mind is I'm agnostic with leadership. Leadership is an agnostic trait. It doesn't have a religious kick. It doesn't have a right or a left slant to it. It's something that all parties involved would appreciate a kid being able to do, coming out and value a good work ethic, good time on task. You know, the whole mentality of growing up is if you're on time, you're late. If you're early, you're on time. Inbreeding that in kids from the earliest of days to where they understand that it's important to do the small things correctly, because that's what gets them noticed and gets them to stand out in the market today, which makes them a good employer, which contributes. All those things. And you're right, politically, this that statement isn't political. It's just kind of where we are. And it doesn't matter if they're in a high socioeconomic or low socioeconomic, there are still gaps. And it's not 100%. There are families that are doing their part. There are families that are struggling to do their part. And it's not necessarily a fault of their own. It's just a sign of the culture that we're in, and the battle with technology, the battle with all the stuff. But we can talk about all the barriers to that, or we can figure out a way to make solutions. And I think with our vehicle that we've created, and this, our Leader in Me conversation is just one small part of a framework that we've built in Lincoln County that gives us a vehicle over the next past couple of years, leading into the next 4 to 5 years, that this is a slow rollout, a slow progression build, that we are changing a culture. And I think that's the thing. We have the buy-in because the workforce, the industrial managers group, the small business group, the big mega international corporation leaders, they all say the same thing. The things that we're doing are impacting their workforce. It's the things that they want to see to happen in their workforce. It's becoming part of our drive, if you will, for businesses to want to come here when they know that we're being supported with a Leader in Me district mentality, because this is kind of how we're preparing our kids for the future. And that future isn't tomorrow. That future is probably 5 to 6 to 10 years down the road that finally we'll see the real fruit of this effort being paid off for our community and for our economy, but also just for our families and for our dynamics and for how we present ourselves. My goal is that when our kids stand up shoulder to shoulder to a kid in a college or in a work environment, that they're going to be seen as different because we've trained them up to be different.
Yeah, I think so. Something you said there about kind of a slower implementation, a slow methodical kind of rollout, that speaks deeply to me. When I think about slow rollouts, I used to talk to my superintendent or talk to my principals who reported to me as I kind of wanted, and this has another political, today's, everything I'm about to say always has some sort of political slant. I'm just talking about the Chick-fil-A growth model, not any other stance other than Chick-fil-A could have a number of times blown up the number of franchisees they went, but they went slow and methodical so that they didn't ever give up quality. So I have a strong belief in how you're doing it is great. However, there are times, and I'm sure you've experienced this in your community, where people say, we have to do everything now. So yeah, it's nice. You're going to have 2 years this school, 2 years that school. I wouldn't assume that people that are in your district are clamoring for that. Like your teachers probably want slow and methodical. But how do you push back where folks are saying, we don't have any time to waste? Aaron, we've got to do everything now. This school year, we can't wait for 3, 4, 5 years from now. What's your response to folks who have that kind of urgency boiling over?
So I use, going back to the colleague that we have in relationships with Chad. Yeah. You know, he coined this phrase, and I've used it a lot. It's the crockpot approach to the microwave approach. There is, if we're going to make lasting change, we all know the research behind it, and you know, the whole developing a habit piece. It's not something you're going to do quickly, and you're not going to do just shot in the pan. You got to slowly bake it. You got to slowly progress it, and slowly put it in the crockpot and just let it simmer a little bit, because not everybody's ready for it. But also, some people want it now, but not everybody's ready for that now, because, you know, hey, we still got all these mandates from the Department of Public Instruction, from the General Assembly, from these other things that we still have to manage. So there's a balance to the rollout. There's a balance to those that are willing to take it on at the beginning. And then, you know, some people are a little skeptical. The business industry sees it as, hey, get on it now. But they understand that progress in the education system is slow. If anything, it's consistently slow. We don't do anything fast, which is a good thing on most cases, because we don't want to be reactive to things. We want to study. And to be honest, I think I've searched, and I told this to a friend of mine, I searched for I don't want to call it a program, but I'll say it's a program for now. I searched for a program or something that encapsulated kind of my philosophy of leadership. And it took me 24 years until I found this, until I found Covey. And it was by accident because I walked into a meeting one day late and I had no idea. It was a state meeting and the presenter was up there through Covey and doing the presentation. I'm like, wow, what is going on here? What is this? I'm checking yes to all these boxes. This is kicking with me. And then later I found out that this was Covey's, rollout to our organization. And then that just started me like, well, okay, if I'm hooked in with what I'm here now, I want to learn more. And then I was like, this is the vehicle that I've been looking for that matched my philosophy, matched my leadership style, matched my heart, but also just kind of, I think, would fit our district well, because there's a lot of like-minded people that want to see leadership development in kids, but also we know we recognize that is an accent to our academic work. We don't have a shortage of academic resources. We've got a tool, we've got a computer program, we've got a book, we've got something that's going to tell us, but this is no silver bullet. There's no silver bullet out there. But one of those things where I think this is changing people is it's changing habits and changing people internally in their heart. We talk about it a lot. The paradigm shift is a heart shift. It's not a mind shift. We know a lot of stuff. We just got to internalize it and really believe it. And that paradigm shift is happening slowly in places, and it's changing our workforce. It's changing our adults. It's changing families. It's making them better at their home. So if they're better at their home, they're better at work. If they're better at work, they're better on the weekends. You get the point. It's all reciprocal.
No, you're great. When you're saying that, I have a couple of superintendent friends who have tried to do different rollouts, and this is non-leader me rollouts throughout the district, right? And they have three different personalities. I would say two of them were really successful. One, not as much. And there's a lot of reasons, again, confidentially, why we would think in our tight friendship. But yeah, you're someone who's been in your community for a number of years, right? Like you've been a principal. You have years of relationship capital to call upon.
Correct. Right? If I was new, I don't know that I could do this if I was brand new, for sure.
But this is the debate, right? This isn't, so that is good. I would say, let's say you were even though you were new and you still wanted to do this, I'm curious how you would go about it. Because my question, right, we're focusing this whole semester on the speed of trust, right? So I have these solo episodes once a month where it's just about how important trust is to doing anything within your organization, right? So you had a lot of trust capital built up, yet you still went slow. So my first question is, before we say new versus old, you of all people could have been like, team, you know me, we're going. Why do you still think it was important to go slow, even though I think you had the relationship capital to implement quickly?
I have the relationship capital with the principals and the assistant principals. I don't have the relationship capital with all of the teachers, and the teachers have to be the ones to implement it. And we value the fact that those closest to the work have to have a hand in the formation and the creation and the rollout. That's why the framework of creating your lighthouse team, creating your committee chairs, those kind of things, is an integral to getting it to crock pot, so to speak, in the school. I could have said mandate, we're doing this, because the General Assembly and our Department of Public Instruction mandated a certain PD, and it was met with a lead balloon, resistance. People just, I'll do it because I have to. And I'll learn something along the way, but I won't like it while I go through the journey. This is something that I want them to embrace wholly, not just for their professional self. This is something that if everyone really understood what we're trying to help them become, it's that investment in them. And then the investment in them will spill over to the investment in the kid. So I have the trust capital with our administrators because I have that working relationship on a consistent basis. And I would say probably for 40% of our staff, because in my tenure here, I've been in this county for 15 years in different roles and different stages along the way. And I've worked across the county, and I live now here in the county. And all those things matter. And I could have mandated it, but just like anything else, when you're mandated to do something, you got a little bitterness, a little resentment, and it's not buy-in. I want this to be organic. I want it to be long-lasting. And I want it to be here beyond me. I'm building a program, and I'm building a philosophy, and I'm building a culture that hopefully will exist beyond my time. And whether that is 5, 10, 15 years, whatever, I'm hoping that whoever comes behind me in the not so near future because I still have a little bit ways to go to retirement. I'm hoping whoever follows up behind us continues this trend or allows the trend to continue and grow, because we've started the momentum. People in the community are appreciative. They're noticing it. They're talking about it. Businesses want it. People are excited. It's making changes where people once thought change could not happen in certain pockets of our system. And so the fruit is getting ready to start to blossom, and then it's going to catch wind and continue to snowbill, or, you know, build upon itself. But that's good, because that's where it becomes sustainable. And that becomes, it's not about me, and it's not about just what he wanted. It's about creating a system of expectation and a value system that is important to all people from pre-K to the 70-year-old.
So it sounds like one real good way to build trust, particularly when you want to introduce or implement big initiatives throughout the district, is to make sure you're empowering the teachers to have some voice and choice. And like you said, you know, we talk about a lot of times with Chad, is a crock pot, not a microwave. And then third thing I heard there is, when you're making decisions, how can you make decisions that set the likelihood up that this initiative or whatever it is isn't just a check mark, checkbox, because the state said whatever we're doing, but it's something we're trying to put roots in so it lasts past all of our time and whatever we're doing. Is that right?
That's right. You said it well. And the only thing I would add to that is that for the first time, we're intentionally asking the voice and choice of our kids, where I think this is the, through the tools through that have come with Covey's, with the relationship with Covey, through the MRA and through other opportunities, we're intentionally asking kids to be a part of the conversation when that was not done before. That makes it a little vulnerable for teachers to turn over, you know, authority and autonomy and what they do in their classroom. It makes it a little scary, and not everybody's ready for that, you know. And it's not about a generational thing. It's about a confidence thing from a teacher's inner confidence about how they can, the trust and the relationship they have with their kids. And some people are struggling with that right now, and understanding that I have to give away a little power. But ultimately, if I do that, then my job may become a little more enjoyable, a little easier. And it's not that I'm giving the kids more work to do. I'm giving kids different work to do. And it's a different level of responsibility work that's value added to their overall journey, and not just an assignment. That, my friend, is the real change that has to happen, because that's not the way teachers were taught that went through a traditional program. But those teachers that are coming in from a lateral entry or from an alternative license perspective, they're more willing to do that because they've not been taught. Remember, it goes back to the untrained, all that stuff. We're training them about the way we want it to roll on the job, and they're more accepting typically early on in the stages.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that, you know, I believe if I've got your bio right, you may have been principal of the year at some point, right? You may have been, I'm making this up, but I'm assuming a lot of principal of the year, generally when they get that role, they've been some sort of teacher of the year, even if it was like a private like win somehow. And so you weren't, okay, nope. Okay, that's right. So you were, I want everyone to hear this, average to below average teacher, exactly. Excellent principal. So that's what I just heard. Yeah. All kidding aside, you don't become principal of the year or get accolades like that and continue to have a career within a district long term if you haven't shown that you value other people's impact and or input. I mean, and I assume when you're making a culture, you're leading a culture within a school where you're the principal of the year, there's probably a lot of joy and passion in schools and your kids specifically, definitely your teachers, but also your kids. And you're telling me through the Leader Me process, you're still having ahas of, man, I got to go another step further to unlock student voice in our schools. What is it? What's the difference between most great schools, most great principals, most great teachers, most great principals? Definitely, if you ask them, they're like, yeah, I give students voice all the time. What is different with that answer you would have given, you know, 5-10 years ago, to what you would say now about how you're trying to get student voice and highlight it and attack it in all of your schools?
So I would say what's different is when I was a principal, I did ask for student voice, but it was maybe 20 to 40 kids out of a student body of 1,000. It was those kids who wanted to be the leaders, wanted to be on the resume builders, that kind of stuff. But today it's really expecting all kids to have a role, all kids to have a voice, and doing that intentionally, even down to the classroom level, to the club level, not just a specialty type group or specialty type service group. It's the expectation that all are doing it and all have a stake in the mission and vision of the classroom, the department, the grade, the school, the club, the team. You get the point. And it's not just relegated to a few, which is the old model. It's that model that when I grew up existed. It's when anybody who's probably 35 and older existed in this model where leadership was for the few, instead of understanding leadership is for all when you set up the right parameters. And when I talk to principals about this now, if you believe that leadership is for all, then you'll show me in your evidence of your schedule, of your master schedule, of your club schedule, of opportunities that you give kids, and really how you structure your staff meetings, your feedback loops. If you can show me that, then you're living out what you say you value. Just as if you value everyone has genius, you're going to show me that happens. And I say that from the idea of we bought into that from a district perspective, and we've gone some non-traditional routes. When we look at hiring people people may look at you a little sideways when you're like, you've hired that person to work in a school system. Well, maybe they don't even know how to read. Yeah, they don't know how to read, but you know what? They can do all these things with their hands. And if I put them with a person that can guide them with their reading ability, then they can make an impact to a kid who once thought they couldn't ever do a job because they had a limitation. And so the fact that we're taking chances with some people that have a labeled disability or an impact of something that would have prohibited them from a previous opportunity, we're taking chances on people like that to show that we value everybody. And because it's not just a good old poster up here for somebody to say, oh, look at them. It's really who we are. And because I think that's the other piece, is we're having to change our mentality of people because our workforce has become limited. And if we don't expect different, if we don't try to create systems in a way that allows us to support people differently, even with very limited resources, the applicant pool is drying up. And if we don't think differently, we're not going to be able to stay reactive to the changes that are culture throwing at us.
Yeah. So it sounds like if I'm trying to solve these problems, we talked before we even got on the recording today about how it used to be the retention of teachers and the hiring and attracting of new teachers. It was a struggle, but only in certain pockets mm-hmm. of the country. And it feels now it's everywhere. So retaining staff and recruiting staff becomes almost one of your top hats that you wear as a superintendent. It sounds like, you know, one, you had the experience of coming in as a non-traditional teacher, so you understand like how important that can be. What do you think you all are doing or have done that people can learn from about better retaining staff and hopefully attracting more staff? Like what are some initiatives or what some changes that you've seen make that have really had impact in those areas?
So I'll say, you know, if I go back to 25 years when I started, it was, if you had government work, if you had a state, if you were a state employee, you were solid, you were set for life. And that loyalty factor was kind of a foregone conclusion. You're with us for the next 30 years. You're not leaving unless your spouse gets moved. Well, today we're really an option for people. And it's changing the mentality that loyalty may be something that I value, but it's not the thing that I value. And at one point in my life, loyalty was super big to me. Today it's, okay, if I have you for 3 to 5 years, then I need you to really pump it out for 3 to 5 years. And if you move on, I completely understand. Because you know what? I've changed jobs too. I've changed counties. And to say that I'm critical of people that leave us, I just want your time here with us to be as effective as possible. I'm going to pour into you. You pour into us. And so we've really bought into this idea of personalized learning, not just for our kids, but for our staff. We really try to tailor things to help them grow in as an individual. There's some things we have to do blanket, right? But at the end of the day, is that if you need to be grown in this area or you in this area, we're going to do that. We're going to invest in you differently. But based on your level of readiness, if you tell me, hey, Dr. A, I'm ready to experience something, then I'm going to look for that. But if you don't come tell me that you're not ready, I'm not going to force it on you, right? And so you're kind of in charge of your own path a little bit and putting that on them to be responsible for their journey of growing as in this profession, in this job, in this area, in the space. And if that means I help you grow into a different space, so be it, because you've helped us during the time that you're here. And I think that's probably the hallmark too, is that we try to, and it's hard because we're the largest employer in Lincoln County. We have 1,300 full-time employees, and we have 2,000 if you consider our part-time with our full-time over 2,000 of those folks, and we serve 11,500 kids on a daily basis, pre-K to high school. And in that, you're like, whoa, wow. I mean, it is. It's a chore, and we don't get it right all the time. But where we, I think, are making strides is that retention is our new recruitment, right? We have to keep people here and make good on the investment. And we're focusing a lot on this return on investment. And I've got great staff that are digging into the return on investment of what we consider traditional things that may just not be producing the fruits that we want. And how can we rethink things differently to get the better impact? And some of that is training people intentionally different to try to do some, you know, I won't say experimentation, but, you know, there is a certain thing of having an idea and letting some people run with it. And if it fails, it fails. But what do we learn from it instead of kind of keeping everybody closed up and give people freedom to explore, freedom to fail, freedom to succeed? And then we learn from it. And we're also talking right now about this idea about admiration versus envy. And, you know, a lot of us, if we see you succeed, then we're a little jealous, we're a little envious. But instead, why can't we support and be like, man, look at what they did. That's awesome. Good job. Instead of being like, well, they had all these other things that they helped them get there. We're trying to reframe the narrative and retrain our initial reactions of our colleagues and our community and ourselves. We're not competing with each other. We're supposed to be supporting each other. And so with that comes collaboration. With that comes support. It doesn't come competitiveness. Even though there is something healthy about being competitive, but we don't need to have internal competitiveness. We need to have admiration and collaboration. And that's kind of where we've been pushing lately, is in that space of reframing the conversation we have with each other face-to-face and also in the social media world, which I can't stand. It's a necessary evil, by the way, but it's one of those things where we're telling our story some way, somehow. And if people pick up that we're envious of each other, that there's a rift, then that tells us about our family, our community, right? And so we're trying to retrain our brains, retrain our emotions to be in that space with each other, because that's part of the recruitment piece. If we can keep you here and support you and grow you and let you find space that you can grow as a professional, but also grow in your craft and support you for it and clap for you along the way, I mean, that builds a different kind of culture that is not the norm in society today.
I like this. Retention is the new recruitment. And we call it in Franklin Covey, the abundant mindset versus a scarcity mindset, right? So recognizing that someone else's win doesn't diminish your impact. And so often in schools, it's so funny. I can even think about 20 years ago when I was teaching. If I say one of my friends got an award or something, I played sports. And I was a point guard. So I love getting assists. So seeing everybody else dunk on somebody or do something, it always excites me. It doesn't have to be about me. So I'm wired that way. But I'd be sitting in a staff meeting thinking, that's great. Dr. A just killed it. Let's look at this. And there'd be a lot of folks that would be like, oh, of course he did. Of course he gets, he's that person's favorite, or this happens. How do you try to impact the culture, or how do you help lead your principals create a culture where you're chipping away at that? Because I think that exists in almost every school and every organization outside of education in the country. I'm just curious if there's any innovative things that you guys have tried to start making that a different way of being and a different way of living.
I don't know that that's innovative or special, but it's intentional. So I will say, okay, get ready, so-and-so principal, I'm going to ask you to talk about this. And then they're like, oh no, please don't, because they're going to say this, or they're going to think that. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to hit it head on. I'm being intentional. I need you to contribute to the collective body of knowledge, because it's the idea that if you can inspire somebody to take a little bit of nugget. And I think we get jaded as we get older. I'm not saying this to stereotype older leaders are more jaded, but in the idea that if you're new, you're more like that sponge that we want to be like, man, that's awesome. I think I can try that. Or that's so cool. But as we get older, our sponge doesn't absorb as much anymore. And in that idea, then it becomes less likely to want to listen or want to share or want to appreciate others for the work that they're doing. I say from my perspective, it is finding somebody, but it's also being intentional, because I have 23 schools, 23 leaders that are being successful in their buildings every day. It's my job to find those highlights and bring them out, because they're humble. They're not going to say, hey, look at me, I'm doing all this great stuff over here. I have to find that and push them into that spotlight, then also coach the others around them to say, you know what, they're doing a hard job. Being a principal today is a daggum hard job. Being a teacher today is a hard task. This is not easy work. And we just had this conversation with our beginning teacher orientation. You have entered a noble profession, but it is hard. If you think it's something different, then you've grossly misjudged this this opportunity, because today's teaching is definitely hard. But leading in today's space is definitely hard, because everyone has an opinion that you're wrong. And most of the time you are going to be wrong in someone's eyes, and you have to be okay with that space, right? You have to be okay to get a little cussing out. You have to be okay with setting some boundaries. You have to be okay of really understanding that you have to do that in order to be a successful leader. And I say it takes some time for people to experience those hardships to realize that I'm saying the right thing. But I think our district is small enough. We're not so small, but we're not super big. We're in that middle third of size of systems in North Carolina. But we have a staff that is dedicated enough here, and leadership group that's dedicated enough, that we go out and have face-to-face conversations. People know our phone call. They call me. There's no multiple laps and multiple levels that they have to get to find an answer. And I think that small town approach with organizational structures that allow us to serve people in a different way, to cross train. I'm intentionally training people to be my replacement. And so I want people to experience every level, every community, and those things right there. All of that speaks to the idea of I'm showcasing you. I want you to go over here and experience this. And I'm being strategic in what I give you to do, because it's part of your learning journey and learning path to be the better leader for the future, not just now. And some of our principals have figured that out on their own. And some are, I'm helping to figure that out, because that's the piece. Everyone wants to focus on the right now. I got test scores to improve right now. You do, but you also have a commitment that 3 years from now, this teacher is going to be ready to take this next step in their journey. And so you're looking ahead. You're thinking of the now. You're thinking of the ahead. And that's kind of the piece that not everybody automatically gets. That's a learned skill that you have to teach people. And that takes time. That takes intentionality. The other thing we say a lot here, efficient isn't effective. And so coaching is an effective use of your time, and it's not an efficient use of your time. And if you're really going to make change in somebody, coach them upright. And, you know, you said something about the assist as a point guard. The first thing that popped in my head was Dean Smith. And every time you made a shot, you were to give that guy who gave you the assist, you were to point him out and give him the thumbs up, right? It's recognizing the fact that other people are helping you achieve what you were doing. And that's some, unfortunately, like he almost mandated it as part of his program. Well, you have to today, because giving other people credit isn't something a lot of people innately want to do, you know?
Absolutely. I think thinking about all the threads you've kind of built for us today in the conversation, you were talking earlier about, you know, so much time. We have the knowledge. We've read how to do something. We've read all these different theories on leadership. But how do you translate those paradigms to your heart, which then builds real action? And so when I asked this question, how do you do it? You said, oh, I don't know if it's innovative. And that's actually the magic answer for me. If I'm a leader, I'm thinking it's actually not innovative or magic, but so many people stay up here in their head and have a lot of reasons why not to do something versus letting it get to their heart and just stepping out in courage and think, I want to build a culture that is of abundant mindset, where we're celebrating other people's winning and not worrying about it diminishing others, because we're going to celebrate everybody. I want to create a culture that embodies that kind of loving servant mindset. And so you do that by letting it sinking into you, who you are, and then just taking those steps is what I hear. Is that right?
That's right. And it's not some people get kind of sideways a little bit when they're like, well, you just want to give everybody a trophy. No, I don't. This is not a everyone gets a trophy community. It's an expectation that we celebrate the goodness and the genius in people, but there are standards. You know, everyone has to meet us where we expect them to go, and we set that bar, and we want to move that bar, right? But at the end of the day, the other thing that I'll say is, you're right. It's a heart thing, right? And so I am transparent with my perspective, with my stance, with my vision, with my mission. And I've said it to many people in the last couple of years, you know, this is where we're going. If you want to be a part of it, stay on the train. And I've got these five paradigms that we're building a framework around, these five paradigms. If you aspire to these, then you will get along just fine in our school system. You will find success and find joy. If you aspire to three of the five, you might be a little sideways. You might struggle a little bit, but you'll still be successful. But if you don't believe in any of these zero of our five, if you believe in none of them right now, it's probably time for you to look for another job. And it's just, I'm that hard about it, because you're either with us or you're not. And eventually you will either figure out a way to change your heart, or you'll leave because you'll want to go to a different culture. And we're building a culture, and not every culture is for everybody, right? And so it's one of those things that I'm building a culture. We're building a culture of this team. I'm building one for myself, for my family. We're building one for this office, for this district, for this county, for this community. And if you want to be a part of it, then this is kind of what our philosophy is. And our neighbors, some of our neighbors that touch our borders, they don't have that philosophy. And so some people will find other opportunities. There is no shortage of teacher opportunities today that they can go find. But when I say it that way, some people feel like I'm mandating this, but I'm not. I'm just telling them, you know, we're building an engine. We're building a product that is rooted in this. If you like that product, then you'll stay. If you don't, then just like anything else in consumer economics, you're not going to buy it. You're going to look somewhere else, right? That's kind of where I'm at. I'm not mandating that Leader in Me and Franklin Covey becomes our framework, and we don't always aspire to the five paradigms. You have to do that. I'm saying this is where we're going. If you believe in it, then we're going to give you the tools to be successful. If you need to study it first, I'm giving you time to do that. But then once you study it, then you'll start believing, you'll see in the change. And then over time, you'll start living it out. And that's the slowness to go fast mentality that we aspire with. A lot of the stuff that we have to roll out is that our community really is skeptical sometimes. And we're trying to be transparent and just say, look, there's no hidden agenda. This is where we're going, and this is why. And if you need time to study it, that's fine. Those of you who are ready, let's go ahead. Those who need a little bit more convincing, that's fine. I'm not going to make everyone go at the same rate of speed. We don't ask our kids to do that. You know, we criticize the government for saying that everyone has to be ready and accountable on day 180 of the school year and take a test and show all these things. We know that not everybody gets at the finish line at the same time. Not everybody gets to the starting line at the same time for this journey. But once you're in it, I think you'll find that this matches with the philosophy. And ultimately, this is what all educators that were trained and even untrained, good parents, want for their kids, want for themselves. And it's just good internal opportunity to be a better person. And that's kind of where we have a framework that does that beyond the math and the reading that we're asked to do on a daily basis.
Yeah. So we got to get to the rapid fire portion to honor your time, but I want to ask, your courage right there and conviction has probably come through some ups and downs as a leader, some growth as a leader over time. And we know, I mean, you know, being principal of the year, I bet even the year you're principal of the year, there are plenty of times where you're thinking, man, this is lonely. This is hard. This is all the things. So my question for you is, there's a lot of folks that have taken, you know, if I think about this journey that we've been talking about, we've got a lot of knowledge. How do we take that knowledge and succinctly make it to our philosophy and heart? And then how do we have the courage to take the steps? Yes, some people are wired. Many leaders are wired to put themselves out there. But transformative leaders have the clarity that you're talking about. And that's a step that we want to help shorten that curve for, so we can have more transformational leaders. How do you help those leaders? Or what's your suggestions or recommendations for leaders who are kind of at that place of scared to really step out with boldness, feel lonely in this sense? How have you gotten out of that space before? And how do you keep yourself in a space of bold confidence, staying on your vision, moving forward?
Well, from my role specifically, I have to have a board of education that governs me, my bosses, that supports where we're going. So they've had to buy into this vision as well and support the initiatives and support all that. That's the first thing, the hurdle for me in this superintendency role. Your board has to support where you're wanting to take the district. And this is a long-term commitment they're committing future boards to buying into this philosophy too. It's that important, right? So when you get to that piece and you get that hurdle, which I've had a super chair, super vice chair, and super board that has said, yes, we buy into it. We're all in alignment. Our arrows are all going in the same direction. The second piece of that is I've surrounded myself with people that are on both sides of the fence. And some people that I will sit at a table and have this discussion, and they're like, ah, it's just a program. It's just a fad. It's this. And then another one's like, tell me more. I want to know what you're doing. And so it makes me accountable to really what we're doing and the why and helping people and helping me justify, so to speak, why we're doing what we're doing and why this philosophy is so important. The next part of that, I think, though, is the idea that I've created some great partners, think partners, that have can understand my journey a little bit through Covey, but also not outside of Covey, that can understand where I want to go. And I may not get it right the right time. In fact, I've had to regroup and punt with Chad a couple of times with how we roll some stuff out. But I think if there was one thing that I could probably say in my chosen path with partnership with Covey is that, and you said it before, speed of trust. So we purposefully rolled out some programs, some books, some book studies, some opportunities for exploration of topics of content. We've done the speed of trust. We did Trust and Inspire. We did all of that before Seven Habits even came on docket. So we're building this trust culture. We're working on trust because, I mean, I get it. People are skeptical. They're more and more skeptical today, and that doesn't live outside of education. If I was a brand new superintendent, though, I think I would have a long entry plan, a long listening and learning tour, so to speak, to see if this was something that needed to be existing in this area and in space. And I think building trust is probably the first thing that you have to do. And you build that trust through opportunity. It's that command and control leadership versus Trust and Inspire leadership. And really, you know, even when I teach adjunct professor for a university, and that's something we talk about a lot is what kind of leader do you want to be? And so not everybody's ready to get rid of command and control. You know, like there's comfort in that. There's authority in that. There's structure in that. And there's looseness and there's vulnerability. That's right. And there's vulnerability in Trust and Inspire. Like I have to extend trust to you and I don't even know you yet, but I'm doing that under a veil of understanding that I'm trusting you in your position and you and your authority, not you as a person yet, but I hope to get that with the relationship. And again, that goes back to efficient and effective. Trust and Inspire leadership is not efficient. It's an effective leadership style that takes time to cultivate. And I think that's what some people are hesitant about with this program is because they understand leadership development is rooted in relationships, and building relationships takes time. And time is the commodity that people would rather keep and just pay you money to not lose their time. And we're fighting that right now. Time is the commodity of choice for everybody because we're in a culture that no one thinks they should have staff meetings before and after school, that they shouldn't be held beyond the 7.5-hour day, that they shouldn't have to do things in the summer. And there's probably truth to that to a certain degree. But when you become an educator, you don't educate kids in a mentality of 10 months from 7:30 to 3:30 and you don't do anything else. Like other jobs, you can leave it and walk away. Education is not that way. So it's a paradigm. Do I have a job that I punch a clock or do I have a philosophy of changing kids' lives? And if so, then that may mean I do things a little differently than the private sector. And that's the hard part in the culture of today's new worker, of helping them understand they want to make a difference. That this generation wants to be an impact for the next generation, but they also want working conditions that are very different than what we're used to having in this educational space. And so through building this relationship, building leadership, you know, it starts to change their view of their role. And I think that's probably a fear factor for some people is that it takes time. This is an investment. This changes culture. And to do that, you got to be all in and you got to pay attention. And I'm a little unique. I've been told this by Chad and Leslie and some other folks with Covey is that you're really involved as a superintendent that most people aren't. And I think that's because I'm passionate about it. And I think that goes back to why I do what I do. I've realized that I find joy in growing leaders. And so because I find joy in that, I want to do more of it. If people don't find joy in growing leaders, then they find joy in looking at test data or something else. Yeah. And that's where they drive their time and their energy. My energy is in growing leaders and not just here, but I want this system to grow leaders for my kids and my kids' friends and then how that ripples down the road. And so it becomes personal too. And the fact that I have kids in the district, that ramps it up a notch, right? For me is that I'm not only investing in 11,497 other kids, I'm investing in three of my own.
All right. I promise you, and I've already gone against it, getting you out here on time. So I will try to do my best to get there. Let's go through our rapid fire questions that we've asked everybody for probably 4 years now. What's a habit or discipline that you utilize every day or every week to be the best version of yourself?
So I think for me, it's that proactive piece. I always look at my calendar every morning, and not just for the day, but for the next day and the week. And I'm always looking ahead to make sure I'm covered and I'm ready to go, and I'm prepared. And there's things that still catch me off guard, but I think looking at I live by and die by my calendar, and my wife gets on me all the time, but it's one of those things, if I didn't, I would not be able to be productive and be ready for all this job and all my personal life entails.
That's great. What about a book? Or you can cheat and have multiple books that have really spoke to you and your leadership over the years that you would suggest for any other person to read or listen to on audiobooks, which so many people do know.
So I just got tuned into this book. It's by Dr. Henry Cloud. It's called Necessary Endings. And I actually finished it up. And it's one of those that actually my former board of education chair gave it to me to challenge me. She said, I think you will benefit from reading this book. And I gave her a book from Tony Dungy. Kind of we switched off, but I think her book was better than mine. No offense to Tony, but Necessary Endings is really from my space right now in my career. It is one of those that's speaking a lot to me right now.
Just give a quick highlight. What is the gist of like the tagline so people can be interested if they've heard of it before or haven't read it yet?
So in the space that we're in education, you know, we're slow to do anything different and change. And so it's really examining what's in your personal life, what's in your professional life, what's in your organization that needs to stop. It's that notion of good to great. What do you need to give up to do better? And so what do you need to stop doing just because you've done it for 15 years? You know, as a former Southern Baptist, you know, Baptists are the worst ones to just keep doing things for 20 something years and never stop and never question why. It gives you the wow, I hadn't thought about it that way mentality about a lot of things and a lot of spaces in your life that you probably need to examine. Do I need to stop doing this to get something better in the return?
I grew up in the same world. We probably have another podcast that's off the record regarding that. So walk-up song. My kids love to know everybody's walk-up song. That's an obsession that we've had for several years now. If you have a walk-up song for today, or where you're at in your headspace right now, what's your walk-up song going
to
be?
It's probably because I was listening to it this morning, but what comes to mind is Josh Baldwin has a song called Made for You. And so to me, it's kind of not one of those bows to the 1990s and 80s music selections, but it's one that speaks to me in my space right now in my life, Josh Baldwin.
I love it. I'm a little disappointed you didn't pick a Taylor Swift song. I thought you had that in you, but... last question. What's the, you know, you're someone who is around leaders in your community, you know, whether it's your teachers, parents, business community, whatever. And I'm sure you're someone who's plugged into another number of other folks who are thinking and trying to help you grow your leadership. I assume you listen to podcasts and read other books. What's the best piece of leadership advice that has kind of hit you in a way that you just are meditating on right now? Like, man, like, you know, it's even a TikTok video of like, I did not think about leadership that way. I'm just curious if there is a quote or an idea that's really been captivating you lately.
So James Franklin, the coach at Penn State football, he has a TED talk that I've watched recently, came across. It's been a while and I've come back to it in the space. It's about establishing core values for his team when he came to Penn State and really had the process he had to go through and why that was important to him. And I've reflected on that because I had to do something recently like that within our space here we've had a lot of new people. So, you know, core values are something that I sometimes take for granted, but not everybody understands that about me. So it's being intentional about establishing that with new administrative teams and new leadership groups. You know, in our district, we have this year, it's an anomaly, but we have a lot of new teams. And so 23 schools, I've got 14 new teams. So I'm having to be intentional, what I call professionally speed date your assistant principal, speed date your principal, and ask some questions that they normally probably wouldn't ask them each other, even in the first week, much less the first probably 6 months of being in a relationship, professionally. I'm having to force that conversation. And that's exactly what James was having to do when he came to Penn State. He had to force the conversation about examining what you really believed and what your core values were. And that complements the work we're trying to do with leadership development here, is really kind of making sure people are transparent, aware, and just understand each other when there's a little rub. You know, why is this person getting on my nerves? Well, it's because maybe they value this and I value something different. And it's bringing an awareness to teamwork that maybe didn't exist on its own, much less unless we kind of intentionally brought it to their forefront. They probably wouldn't go down that rabbit trail to explore that about each other. So really, that video right now, it's about a 6-minute TED Talk. I highly encourage people to watch it just to kind of get a frame of reference of the importance of establishing core values.
No, that's awesome. Last question is one that I've just added in recently as I've talked to more superintendents. And it's kind of like one of those like soft lobs, so you can slam dunk it, but it's intentional of, you know, your job is to really speak about the power of your district and tell your district story to everyone, right? So this is like the last interview question. Why should we hire you? So my question generally for you is, why should someone move to your community to send their kids there? Why should someone who's an educator, whether it's a teacher, principal, or a district level official, come and join you all and your district in the work that you're doing right now?
So this answer applies really to a child, but also to an adult employee. You want a someplace for your child or for yourself to be valued, to be a leader, to be recognized for their ways that they can contribute to the collective success. If you want to allow for your kid or yourself to be a part of an institution that values your opinion and your voice and opportunity, but also we want you to be a part of our whole community, not just the little school community that you're a part of. So we expect you to invest yourself, and we'll invest in you. It's not just the school system investing in you. We have great partners from industry to big industry to government to the churches. And being in the South, that's another benefit of being in the South. We have a lot of religious community support for all of our public schools. And so you really have a blanket effect by being in this small town community. Where, you know, we're close enough to the big city, and we're close enough to the mountains and close enough to the beach, but we really are just a unique little community that values hard work, values integrity, values relationship building. And we have four very distinct communities that are very distinct in their school culture and school pride. But at the end of the day, we are all Lincoln County, and that they will protect each other to the outsiders. And really, it's unique to even watch our high school kids that are rivals on Friday night, Monday through Thursday. They come together and they're friends and they hang out, and they really are a real one big community. And again, that just makes us unique. I kid a lot of people sometimes that we're living in a bubble, and I'm just waiting for somebody on the outside to pop the bubble. But for right now, our bubble is special, and we welcome people to come experience what makes us the best, what we feel is the best place and best choice for public education in the Southwest region of North Carolina.
That's awesome. Well, again, it's apparent that our friend Chad has connected us for very obvious reasons. Most of that being your passion for others, your passion for lifting others up to make them more important than yourself. And so I just commend you for sharing your heart today, but also living out that truth every day of, how do you empower, develop the people that could be replacing you or the people that could be leading your community for years to come? And I just thank you so much for giving us so much of your time today. And I wish you the best as you move forward.
I appreciate you too. And give me a chance to tell part of our story, but also just to appreciate what Covey has been able to do for our community and for our organizations.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, I'm actually going to use, I went by Mr. O at my school because my last name was Mr. Odom. It was spelled weird, so I didn't want to hear the joke. So I'm going to end and sign out by saying Dr. A.
Yep.
This has been great. I appreciate you making the time, and I hope our paths cross again really soon.
Likewise. Appreciate you.